On a week like this last one, when Christmas Eve falls in the middle of the week, you've got to get your bulletin information in early for the coming Sunday, and that meant Monday morning at 9 o'clock. And what seemed like a good idea on Monday morning seemed like an odd idea on Christmas Day when I had to think about a sermon on this text. It is a lectionary text. Galatians 4, 1 through 7. The bulletin says 4 through 7. I'm going to be doing 1 through 7. And I suppose it's because it's one of the few times that Paul actually mentions Jesus being born of a woman. So it is a lectionary. This catches the spirit of the lectionary, but there's a whole lot more going on in this text, and I don't know how much Christmas is going to be in this, but, you know, I hope you'll bear with me. It's an interesting text from Paul's letter to the church at Galatia. Chapter 4, verses 1 through 7. I invite you to follow along. In fact, you might want to look at this text in the EPU Bible. And or if you don't, just simply listen for the Word of God carefully as I read these words from the Apostle Paul. My point is this. Heirs, as long as they are minors, are no better than slaves, though they are owners of all the property, but they remain under guardians and trustees until the date is set by the Father. So with us, while we were minors, we were enslaved to the elemental spirits of the world. But when the fullness of time had come, God sent His Son, born of a woman, born under the law, in order to redeem those who are under the law, so that we might receive adoption as children. And because you are children, God sent the Spirit of His Son into our hearts, crying, Abba, Father, so that you are no longer a slave, but a child, and of a child, then also an heir through God. This is the word of the Lord. In 1934, 20-year-old Everett Roos left Escalante, Utah, and took the hole-in-the-rock road towards the Colorado River and was never seen again. He was used to wilderness wandering, though only 20 years old. He'd been doing it for most of his life, wandering through California, deserts, through mountain areas, and through the desert areas of Utah. So he was experienced at what he do. He took two burros with him. But the searchers never found him. They found the burros in a gulch with a campground clearly there and some footprints leading nowhere. And a sign scratched on the rock said, Nemo. Some of you know that is a reference from Homer's Odyssey. In Latin, it means no one. A familiar thing, actually, for Roos to suggest about himself, because he talked about himself, named himself Nemo, no one. It's fascinating to ponder this. Two books have come out just recently, in the last 2 years, about Everett Roos. And what happened to him? National Geographic explored it. No site was ever found of him. There were bones that were found, and they did some DNA testing on the bones, but it turned out to be a Native American. Wasn't Everett Roos. What happened to him? Did he run away with the Navajo in the area? Maybe. Was he killed by a rustler? No evidence of violence. No evidence of suicide. Legends have sprung up about this person. It's fascinating. And quotations, and again, books after books after books. Just go Google Everett Roos, and it's fascinating what you'll find out about him. There are even quotations, books of quotations. Some quotations were put on magnets to put on your fridge. One of them I like a lot is, I just didn't want to live like other people live. I wanted to live more intensely, more richly. I wanted to talk about my passions in case somebody would listen. I wanted to act on my passions and my love in case I could then become more of what I was called to be. An interesting notion, isn't it? I found out about Everett Roos on Sunday morning when my wife gave me a book for Christmas by one of my favorite authors, theologian Belden Lane. Presbyterian theologian, interestingly enough, teaches at a Catholic university in St. Louis, written a lot on the spiritual life as well as academic work, but this one is, he's a backpacker, and has backpacked a lot into the wilderness areas of Missouri and in the Southwest, where Everett Roos backpacked. The book, title of the book is a really, I think it's going to be a fascinating read, Backpacking with the Saints. When he would go and hike, he would take a work of the saints with him and ponder it. But it was the wilderness that really is focused on and what is lifted up in Belden Lane's work. The wilderness and what captivates people like Roos and other people that go into the wilderness. Now think about it for just a second. The Bible is filled with people that have enlightening things happen to them in the wilderness. You can probably name them, can't you? Moses in the wilderness, the Israelite people in the wilderness found enlightenment and identity in the wilderness. The prophets found enlightenment, identity in the wilderness. Jesus himself, a 40-day journey into the wilderness. Why the wilderness? Well, the wilderness is untamed. It's a place to ponder a God who is ultimately mysterious, ultimately untamed. Is not controlled and by our conjurings, by our ways to control God, and we do that, you know. It's a place of risk-taking. As you know, Francis and I love to hike, and even though we don't do too much backpacking, we've done some outback lodges which have taken us pretty far into the wilderness, and almost every hike of any magnitude, of any distance, there is a point at which you think to yourself, I cannot get out of this easily, you know it? This is just a tiny bit scary. And it is. None of the stuff of culture around you, none of the security blankets that we just like to have around us, like Starbucks or more pointedly, CVS, you know, Band-Aids and analgesics and things like nothing. Nothing. If something happened, there's no easy way to get out. And weather comes up, especially in the high country, very quickly. And there's nothing you can do about it. But then on the other hand, it's awesome. The fearsomeness of it. To be out of control, to be vulnerable. The wilderness is that. Now, you don't have to go into the outback country to experience wilderness. I suspect most of us have experienced it before. Maybe some of us are experiencing it now. A life situation can be a wilderness. A coming of age experience can be a wilderness. Coming of old age experience can be a wilderness. Everything in between can be a wilderness. The kinds of crises that come our way that threaten us, the kind of transitions that come our way threaten us. Some of you know that I had melanoma about 6 years ago. Thankfully, it seems to be all okay. No signs of it anymore. I'm very grateful. Thank the Lord. But I never forget being in an oncologist's office and waiting with people who were in varied states of wilderness wandering. And then being in treatment centers, in oncology treatment centers, people in varied states of sickness and in wilderness wandering. It's a very vulnerable place to be where the securities of life are just not there anymore, or they're not evident as they used to be. It's a moment of dying and rising, as the Christian tradition talks about it. And one of the things that I take confidence about in our tradition, in fact, it may be the essence of the faith, is the security of the fact that God brings life out of death, even in the little deaths that we die in everyday life. That may be the ultimate thing about the faith, the Christian faith, I think. And I think Paul was getting at that in this passage. I really am struck, and it wasn't born of a woman, and originally I picked that for kind of a Christmassy text, but I wasn't feeling Christmassy, if you know what I mean, after Christmas. And so this enslaved to elemental spirits that Paul talks about, and the whole context of what the Galatian letter is about. You may know that in Galatians, people who had been freed by their faith in Jesus Christ had once again gone back and reintroduced all kinds of practices that Paul felt were irrelevant to the new faith. Kosher and circumcision for men, one of them. But these elemental spirits are kind of interesting because they seem to be all kinds of other ritual and calendar observances that people were tied to. They were kind of security blankets for the people. And, you know, we do this all the time. Religion produces this for us. And, I mean, it's not necessarily a bad thing if it's a means to an end, but when the means become the end, it's a problem, don't you know? When we collapse the God of mystery into these contained moments, when we collapse the God that we cannot control into something that we can control and is probably more a figment of our wish fulfillment than it is the God who is really God. I think that's part of what was going on. What Paul is trying to get at is that the Lord Jesus Christ has freed us from these things to serve the God who is really God. And that's the essence of it. Some of the stuff going on in Paul's letter to Galatians may seem very arcane to us, but actually we have all kinds of security blankets and things that are really means, and we make them ends. They're means, but we make them ends. Portfolios for retirement, portfolios for our children and their college education, money, passions about security, obsessions about security that everyone is so concerned about. Capitalism is a means, but we make it an end. Preoccupations with Wall Street, but there's more than that. I am a devotee of the spiritual exercises of St. Ignatius, as many of you know, and I've been conducting those exercises for almost 22 years now. And everyone is always brought up short in the principle and in the first principle and foundation of the exercises, which are five brief paragraphs that contain the essence of the exercises. In the fourth paragraph, Ignatius suggests that we be indifferent to matters of health and sickness, wealth and poverty, honor and dishonor, long life and short life. I never conducted those exercises, and I am including myself in this, why I wasn't brought up short with that principle. Indifferent to health, indifferent to wealth, indifferent to honor, indifferent to long life rather than short life. You've got to be joking. And yet, how many people do you know that are obsessed with a long life and health and money and da-da-da, da-da-da? The ends, the means become the end. And then, of course, when the means become the end, you've got to conjure a God that supports that, don't you know? It's what I call the God of the gumball machine or the candy machine. You just put in your money and you take your choice, and a wish fulfillment comes out of it. Sadly, though, or maybe fortunately, this is not the God that Paul experienced in the crucified and risen Christ. The kenotic God, the God who emptied God's self to become human, to connect deeply with humankind. The God who emptied God's self of preoccupation with self-interest, with egocentrism. Wendy Farley does something interesting. She talks about the difference between egoism and egocentrism. She's a theologian, really interesting idea. Egoism is living out of yourself for what you're called to be and do. Egocentrism is everything centered around myself and then centering God around that self-centeredness. But egoism is actually moving beyond oneself to be what one is called to be and do. And you see, that's what happens in the wilderness. Wherever one's wilderness is, whatever it is, it breaks up those things that we think are the security blankets of life so that we can actually worship the God who is really God and the love that is really love, a love that is beyond our control, and yet a love that pulls us out to realize our fully authentic selves. And that's what we're called to be and do, you know. It's a process of dying and rising. Belden Lane quotes an 8th century Sufi mystic, says that we must die before we die. You get it? We must die before we die. And then we can learn that those things we fear, we can love. It's a beautiful idea. I think I've talked to you before about a cone. K-O-A-N. It's an Eastern idea, a notion. It's a phrase that brings awakening. It's a phrase or a word that brings awakening. It's a spiritual tool that it can bring enlightenment. It can break up preconceived thinking. It can be that thing that is the little piece of the wilderness for us. It can do the kinds of things that can break us out of our static ways of being. And a cone for me comes from the book of Galatians. In fact, it's the heart of the book of Galatians. I didn't know this when it came to me. It came to me 42 years ago when I was a college student and I was studying Paul, and it jumped out of the first century and into my heart. Galatians chapter 2, verse 20. I have been crucified with Christ. I myself no longer live, but Christ lives in me. Horrible cone in some ways, but then it's a wonderful cone. It's gone through so many iterations and interpretations, I can't even recount them all to you, but it's one that I repeat daily. It's one that I repeat all the time. I have been crucified with Christ. I myself no longer live, but Christ lives in me. It's about dying to preconceived notions and living to an uncontrolled God, an uncontrolled love that loves me into being and is calling me out of myself and out of my self preoccupations to be a lover of others. That cone has been with me for a long time. I think we all need a cone of some sort that will break us out, the wilderness of some sort that will break us out of these preconceived things. And I can't think of a better time to do it than right before New Year's Day. I'm not really big on New Year's resolutions because they don't work, you know. But we might as well try something. Huh? To break us out of it. To move us out of the comfort zones from the end that enslave us, those elemental spirits that Paul talks about that enslave us, to move us out of it into a love that will not let us go. And into realizing ourselves in others rather than in this obsession that we have with ourselves. It's a beautiful thing, the wilderness. A scary thing, a risky thing. But I invite you to ponder it deeply on this first Sunday of Christmas as we move into the new year, that we might be free to love.